It is the 25th anniversary of the NWO. And you know what got us thinking? What are our favorite wrestling factions of all times? Don't change your dial. Don't turn your set off. This is an all-new episode of the Wrestling Guys Podcast, and it starts right now. Hit the music. All right, returning from the basement in the forgotten borough of Staten Island, New York, this is the Wrestling Guys Podcast. This is the fans' perspective on all things in the world of WWE and the world of professional wrestling. We're your hosts. I'm Eric, otherwise known as Fizz. With me, as always, my tag team partner, Chris Never Miss, a.k.a. the Narcissist, a.k.a. the Total Package, a.k.a. No, that's all I got. That's all you got. That's all I got today. I couldn't think of Luger's other one. Anyway, chilling with the beers today. I need a coffee. I'm going to fall my ass asleep. I'm going to do the clink to seal the deal and to wake my ass up. Hold on. There you go. A little louder there for you out there. Hope everyone's feeling good. I am spent. Had a long day, but we're here. We're up and at 'em.
Yeah, long day, but you're enjoying your summer break.
Yeah, I've been totally slacking since the end of the school year. School year ends. I think I've been making up for lost time because, you know, last year, lockdown, so we really didn't go anywhere. And then I found out Legoland was opening in upstate New York, so we went there today. It was amazing. It was fantastic. But it's a long ass day, man. You got kids, you got to follow them around all day. You go on rides, they got rained on at some point. Hey, fuck it. You know, it comes with the territory. Got some coffee in me. We're going to do it up. I literally said returning from the basement because, my front stairs in my house have been, redone. But while they were being redone, I literally had to go. Me and my neighbor share a basement. There's a wall in between. So in order to get out of my house and in my house, I have to go down my basement, through his basement and out his back door. And I've had to do that for the last 2 weeks. And I hated it. Very nice guy. Love the guy. Great neighbor. But I had to go through his house in order to get out of my house. It's like I was a prisoner for a while. Steps are done now. I was able to walk out the front door today. Felt like freedom. Felt like I got on parole. No, anyway, it's great. And the reason why I say Narcissist Total Package, because our original idea was to cover Lex Luger and the Lex Express, given that the new Icons episode was going to drop. Lex Luger, the whole episode was about Lex Luger, and we were saying that the anniversary of the Lex Express was coming up. Maybe we'll do the watch along SummerSlam 93 of the match and what went wrong and blah, blah, blah. And then they fucking delayed it.
Plans change, pal.
I mean, thank you, Vince. I feel like I'm fucking it's like, what's going on? So apparently, they want a stronger lead-in for the episode. So my guess, if I'm guessing at all, is that they're going to wait till Money in the Bank. And then after Money in the Bank, probably play the episode.
Right. So that means that they would, you know, after when the Money in the Bank pay-per-view is over, then it would
just
go
around and you get the ratings for.
But does that happen, though? Because I got to be honest, when these pay-per-views are over, I shut them off and go to bed.
Me, not necessarily. It depends. It depends on what's on right after. If it's a Broken Skull session, I may stick around and watch it. Like when they did the second part of the Undertaker interview, I stuck around. When I did Randy Orton's after the pay-per-view, I stuck around. If it's the Luger one, I might stick around for that. It depends on what it is. If it's like one of those like day of episodes, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Normally I will. Sometimes too, like if you have people over and you're bullshitting, it's just on in the background. Just leave it on, right? I mean, there are times, and you're right too, there are times where I'm just like, yeah, fuck this. The pay-per-view's over. I'm out, you know?
Yeah.
I gotta admit to you though, I gotta be full disclosure here. I haven't watched Raw in 2 weeks, and not because I'm busy, and it's summertime. It's because I have no desire to see the show.
It's probably been longer for me. I've kept up with what's going on, but actually sat down and watched either Raw or SmackDown or NXT for that matter. It hasn't happened. I haven't even watched AEW, so it's not like I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, AEW is the best, because I haven't watched them either. I hate getting to a point where I don't want to watch it because wrestling has been an important part of my life ever since I can remember. And I've always said I will never turn on wrestling. I'll never not watch it. There was a period of time from, was it 2009, where 2008, 2009, where I actually did stop watching. And I feel like this point in time is actually worse than that point in time. Where it's just like, it's borderline unwatchable for me, at least. Like I would rather just read up about what's happening than and put on a show that me and my girlfriend are watching than sit there and watch Raw for 3 hours.
Yeah, I mean, well, SmackDown, I still watch regularly, and if I don't, I make sure to catch the DVR because I think SmackDown is still a good, still a decent show, and it's anchored by Roman, and Roman's doing great things, so I don't want to miss anything with him, and I think they have a really good roster there, and they're doing better things than Raw. NXT, I try not to miss. I do watch. That's appointment television for me and my son. We watch every Tuesday. We just watched the Great American Bash, and if you haven't seen that, great. Again, Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole just absolutely ripped it up. Tag team match in the beginning. I every match, just from top to bottom, very, very good. And if you don't know, now you know. Hit Row is going to be an awesome group. Since we're speaking on factions, they did this little NXT North America's Isaiah Swerve Scott is now your North American champion there. And they did like a celebration cypher where they all rapped, the entire group. And the crowd was a little silent, but I think the crowd just didn't get it. I thought they ripped it up. I thought they did great. And it was one of the rare times that a championship celebration didn't get interrupted by the face. They actually let them just go. And I thought it was really good. I think they're going to be really, really awesome. I was always a fan of Swerve, and I think Swerve is shining now.
I like Swerve, but I thought Bronson Reed would have a longer title run.
I agree, but I also think that it was hard not to ignore Swerve. I think Swerve kind of came out of nowhere. That being said, because I kind of went off the rails a little bit there. Raw is very hard for me just because, and I, you know, like, same thing with you. I read up, I watch clips on the YouTube just to make sure, like, to catch up and everything like that. But for me, it's like every week, it's the same match. You know, some type of for a while it was some type of McIntyre Lashley. Seems like McIntyre's going to go into a thing with Mahal. Rhea, Asuka, and Charlotte. Asuka, Charlotte, Nikki Cross, or some type of that combination. New Day and RK-Bro, any type of combination of that, whether it's tag or singles. And now it's Ricochet and John Morrison and The Miz, and any combination of that. And for a while it was Ricochet, Carrillo, and Sheamus, and any combination of that. And it's the same fucking match every week. And it's like they were doing the Money in the Bank qualifiers, which was cool. Ricochet getting into a feud with somebody else, I love. And I love that they're doing something different with him. I love that Morrison is shining in Miz's injury. Yo, it's the same thing every Monday. Same thing. Yeah, I don't know what to do.
And we've said it before many times, but it's really mind-boggling that, like, I mean, I don't know how many people they have on their writing staff. From what we do here, it's a large number. How are they not coming up with different things every week? You know, and they have the roster. I know they've made cuts to their roster. And, you know, all that talk about the company selling, that seemed to have died down. Maybe we were all wrong about that. But they made cuts to their roster, but they still have a big one. You know, why are we continuing to see... Now they've just, I feel like they just, in the last couple of weeks, changed up their storylines for Money in the Bank. You know, Lashley's not defending against McIntyre. McIntyre's in the Money in the Bank match. You know, but Charlotte is still facing Rhea again. Right. And it's just like, you know, why can't you figure out something new to do? I would think they have to respond to the fans at some point. I know they find the fans annoying, and fans are annoying, you know, especially wrestling fans. They're never satisfied. And fans like to just hijack things and say that everything sucks, especially when it comes to WWE. And we can, you know, we can talk about that at length and whether or not we agree with them. And I know for the most part we don't. But Raw is not good. It's just not. I really would like to just be like, what are you guys doing here? Like, why don't you see that you're not producing a good product and see what their answer to that question is?
I think we should pool our money and see if we could buy enough stock in WWE to get invited to a shareholders meeting. And maybe we could do like Q&A with somebody.
Right.
Here's the thing. And I know we like to drop a lot of podcasts because me and you, we listen to a lot of podcasts. And I don't give a shit. I really don't, because listen to them because they're good. But recently, this week, was listening to Talk is Jericho, and Lana was on there, CJ Perry, the recently released Lana, formerly known as Lana. And she said, talking about like the Dolph Ziggler angle with her and Rusev, they got dropped because she got engaged to Rusev in real life from Miro. And all these other angles that got dropped, her and Lashley kind of, Lashley even speaking out saying that him and Rusev never really had the big match to culminate the feud or anything like that. And when stuff got dropped, people would tell her in the back, she didn't name names, just like, you know, well, Vince feels that fans won't remember it. And Jericho's like, that's bullshit, because they do remember. And it's true, because we do remember. We bring this shit up all the time. We'll be sitting around, me, you, whoever else, wrestling. Remember this, remember that. Remember when they did this, whatever happened with that. It's bullshit. Your fair weather fan may not remember because they're fair weather. They don't watch it every week. But your hardcores do. You know, and I think you don't have to cater just to the hardcore fans, but the people that are there every single week watching, buying your tickets and watching all this stuff, like, this is, you know what I mean? Like, those are the people you should be saying, like, yeah, they should be, you know, like, we should be writing to those people. We should have continuity and storylines. We should not just be dropping angles out of nowhere with no explanation or even following up on it. You know, I'm a big proponent of this. And before we get into our thing, and I apologize for going on this tangent here, but do you remember Survivor Series a few years ago when Shane McMahon had came back and they did Raw versus SmackDown, and the first thing that they did was Shane McMahon comes in and had SmackDown invade Raw, and they just went into the locker room and beat up everybody in the Raw roster and knew they were in charge and was like hashtag under siege. And then a few weeks later, Raw invaded SmackDown, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, blah.
That's right? When Nia Jax broke Becky Lynch's face.
And when the Shield had reunited and they faced the New Day, right?
Yeah.
So a few months later, they did a draft, and the New Day goes from SmackDown to Raw. A great continuity and storyline would be, now everyone on that Raw roster should be like, hey, welcome to Raw. And they should smack the shit out of the New Day because they led the charge when they went. Right. There was never any follow through for this under siege, this Raw versus SmackDown, nothing. It was just, we fought each other, somebody won, and then they dropped it. Like, yeah. Long-term storytelling. And this is just me, you know, just thinking of an example of how it's like, so we're just going to forget that the New Day went into the Raw locker room a few months ago, beat the shit out of all of you, and now you're going to be like, oh, shit, welcome to Raw. Like, you need continuity, you know? And they say, we make movies. Movies have continuity and storytelling, so does television. But hiring TV writers that know fuck all about wrestling, and you just saw now this writer who had revealed on a podcast that she doesn't know anything about the wrestling business, but they hired her anyway, and then she ended up getting fired anyway before she even started because she said that. That just goes to show you what's going on over there. And it's yeah. Struggling to me. And I'm with you. Like, I never want to not be in a situation where I'm like, you know, because my son's really getting into it. And that's like, listen, when my son was born, the number one thing I wanted was for him to be a Dallas Cowboys fan and a wrestling fan. He ended up being a wrestling fan. Well, football was still working on because he's still young. He loves it now. And the first thing he wanted to do when the pandemic happened was like, hey, Dad, can we go to SmackDown when they let people back in the arena? And I was like, absolutely. The minute they say he's coming back to New York, we're going.
MSG in September.
And I just bought tickets today.
Nice. Right?
And we're going. But if it was Raw, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was SmackDown. I was like, dude, thank God. But, like, it's hard, man, because this show is struggling. Like I said, NXT is appointment television. AEW, I catch on DVR at some point during the week. It's hard. It is a lot of content. But when something is not interesting enough that makes you want, like, at one point, I'd rather watch, like, a rerun of any show I've seen before than watch Raw on Mondays the last 2 weeks. You know what I mean? And that's telling, bro, because that's live every week.
Yeah, I mean, even the argument that people have made about wrestling needing seasons to kind of, like, just keep it fresh. I mean, even if you do that, when you watch a show season to season, there's still continuity to what's going on. You need more of that continuity when you have a show that is on every single week, multiple times during the week. So to continually just drop these storylines out of nowhere, and it's not only just that kind of gets me, it's also the way they present some of their talent, right? Like, even, and it may be little things, but it's things that matter kind of to me. Like, why is Ricochet in jeans? Like, why are we just dressing up everybody in jeans now? Like, why are we shortening people's names to, you know, removing their first name or their last name? What purpose does that serve? Like, you know, why is Nikki Cross a rehash of Mighty Molly? Or, you know, it's like, yeah, Mighty Molly was at this point over, 10, 15 years ago. So you're presenting it to a newer audience. I get that part. I already feel like it's not working. And that's just me. So it's just like, I don't know what they're thinking.
Yeah, it's a little silly, but I will say this. The superhero idea from the mind of Nikki Cross, completely her idea that they approved.
Okay.
The Ricochet idea, I mean, it's Ricochet's idea to put himself back in jeans from what he has said. Because he said, like, back in Japan when you were a young boy, they wouldn't let you have ring attire. You wore jeans and stuff like that. And he feels like it's going back to the beginning.
Okay.
And kind of cleansing himself and getting a fresh start. I could see it. I don't like it. I love his attire. I thought his shit. I thought his shit was cool. If it's a personal thing for him, and then to go back in it, all right, fine. But like, I have Ricochet in jeans, and I have Elias in jeans, and when Cena comes back, he'll be in jeans, and Sami Zayn wrestles in cargo pants. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Some of that stuff too is like,
because I just feel like, you know, Ricochet with his entrance when he first came up, you know, with the he's got a cool theme song, he had a cool entrance, he's got cool attire, that adds to the character. Now you strip all that down, and what's left? What's left is somebody who now has to solely rely on doing all of these crazy spots that get ridiculed, even by us. You know, like, because there's no character left.
And that's just a guy who could do cool ass shit.
Yeah, it's just a guy who can do cool things, wearing a pair of black jeans, being tossed in and out of storylines that don't matter.
There's nothing. And even... you have pay-per-views every month. I know it's hard, but then you have, like, there are some feuds that just live and die on Raw. There's nothing wrong with that either.
Right.
They don't seem to be doing that, you know. And when you have, like, your top stars, like, who's, like, next in line for Lashley? Like, Randy Orton's in a storyline in a tag, and AJ's in a tag, and you have nobody else. McIntyre's been feuding him for months. Now he seems like he's moving on. Like, I don't think anybody from Raw is winning the Money in the Bank. I kind of think it might be, like, Kevin Owens or something from SmackDown. That's going to win this case. It's going to be somebody from SmackDown to overthrow Reigns. But I think Raw's not even is a factor.
Who is Lashley defending the title against that Money in the Bank?
Beats the shit out of me right now. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm lying. It's Kofi.
It is Kofi. Okay.
Right. Exaggerating there a little bit. But yeah, it's Kofi. And that's cool too, because Kofi's great. You'll get a really good match out of him. And they're doing something different. But you know, like in between Kofi and Lashley teaming up, fighting, it was a New Day RK-Bro storyline every week. And now that seems to be, you know. Anyway, I digress. It's hard. It's hard to watch. I'm going to try to watch this Monday. But again, it's just difficult. And it's hard to follow when it's bad. And the funny thing is that I saw this article the other day where it says WWE is going to the NWO well once more because they've been doing NWO Day because it is the 25th anniversary of the NWO. So it's a good segue to get into this. It's... they've done a bunch of, if you go onto the Peacock, WWE Network, they have a bunch of stuff, different clips, interviews, they have the NWO documentary. Sean Waltman was on The Bump the other day talking about, you know, it's 25th anniversary, the 25th anniversary of the formation of the NWO. 25
years ago.
Scott Hall came from the crowd
in
his jean vest and jeans and said, you know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here.
I remember it was
Razor Ramon accident. Absolutely. He has a Razor Ramon accent. You think it's Razor Ramon invading WCW. They got into a lawsuit because of that.
They did.
Scott Hall, Kevin Nash. He brings Kevin Nash a few weeks later. Also, look at the adjective play. Play is not an adjective. Just saying Kevin Nash. But powerbombing Bischoff through the stage. Hulk Hogan being the third man, which really kicked it off. Because it's like, holy shit, Hogan went heel for the first time in his career. And to think that it was originally going to be Sting. And Sting at first turned it down. He's still the backup. To hear Bischoff say that he didn't think that Hogan would show up at Bash at the Beach, you know, just because he felt that maybe his wife, Linda, might have told him, like, no, because of merch sales and everything like that. Even though Scott Hall has said he still makes six figures off those NWO shirts every year. Believe that. Now, 2021.
Wow. That's
1997.
That is crazy. Good for them.
I got to say, the NWO shirts and the Austin 316 shirt is probably the two best-selling T-shirts of all time, no? I mean, they still
sell. Yeah, I think it's probably not even – I would say that if there's another shirt besides those two that you can throw in, it's probably a DX shirt.
I'm probably Hogan.
Probably a Hogan shirt.
Hogan had a million of them.
But there, I don't think there's anything that comes close to an Austin 316 or an NWO shirt. And I know, you know, we're going to get into a lot about the NWO, but I would make the case that the real reason why, you know, the Attitude Era, everybody said, oh, Austin and McMahon, Attitude Era blew up, wrestling became popular again in mainstream. That is true. But I think the NWO kickstarted that.
Absolutely. And I'll be 100% in agreement with you. But it's funny that you said that because it's also the 25th anniversary. of Austin 316.
Right.
So two big anniversaries this year in 2021. As shitty as 2020 was, we have these great things for your wrestling fans. 25 years of NWO. 25 years of Austin 316. You talk about your Psalms. You talk about John 316. Austin 316 says, "I just kicked your ass," and that's it.
Yep.
There it is. Biggest catchphrase of all time. Mm-hmm. T-shirt of all time, and it took stunning Steve Austin, Ringmaster Stone Cold Steve Austin into the fucking stratosphere. One of the biggest stars of all time. Some say the biggest star of all time.
It's a good argument.
It's a great argument. He's definitely on the Mount Rushmore, no question. Yeah. I think. Because his run, like, dude, they were printing money during his run. Mm-hmm. And it's great. So we were talking about this, and I was saying, you know, thanks, WWE, for deleting the fucking Lex Luger icon episode so we can do the Lex Express. But we will be doing that, by the way. And look out, because that Wrestling Guys PC will keep you updated. But that Lex Express episode is definitely going to happen. We're going to look at the Lex Express. We're going to look at the Icons episode. We're going to probably watch the 93 Yokozuna match that I ordered on pay-per-view and wondered to myself why they were celebrating so much for a count-out victory. But that's we'll save that for the end. And even me, at 93, I was like 8 years old.
Yeah, 8 years old. So, yeah. I remember that pay-per-view, too.
Like, he didn't win the title. Why are there balloons falling from the ceiling? But anyway, our thing was, well, it's 25 years of NWO, it's 25 years of Austin. And I think you came up and said, oh, man, you know, we should really talk about, like, what are some of our favorite factions of all time? And I was like, yeah, we should do, like, a top five.
Mm-hmm.
We've done this stuff in the past, but I feel like my list is always, and I don't know about you, but my lists are always changing.
Lists are always changing. That's why, like, whenever somebody asks me, what are your favorite this, that, whatever, you know, wrestlers, wrestling matches, movies, the ones that don't usually change are, like, 1, 2, and 3. Everything else after that changes.
Yeah, like for me, like, a favorite tag team's kind of favorite, like, same thing with factions, but, like, yeah, favorite matches. I probably have a favorite men's match. I have a favorite women's match. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of them below that are kind of just... two can become three can become seven at some point, and vice versa. Same thing with movies, and same thing with video games, whatever. Yeah, like
anything, really.
Constantly turning. I always have a top, and I've had people. I've plugged stuff in and out, but I feel like I was gonna say it's in no particular order, but as I was looking at the list and coming up with it, I realized that I think I have mine like in order from 5 to 1, and I think it's legit from 5 to 1, like from, you know, fifth being not, you know, where it's supposed to be, one probably being my favorite. I do have some honorable mentions, though.
Nice.
So number one, and this is a little before our time, but as we were becoming fans as well. But the Heenan family is on my honorable mention list. Bobby Heenan, first of all, my opinion, greatest manager of all time.
Agreed. Maybe greatest color commentator too.
Oh, great. He's fantastic. But if you look at the guys that he managed, King Kong Bundy, Andre the Giant, Rick Rude, Hercules, the Islanders, Mr. Perfect, the Brain Busters, mm-hmm. Intercontinental Championship, Tag Team Champions. But he was great at, like, taking those great bumps.
Yeah.
Being in those matches. But I just loved Bobby Heenan. But I loved the name, too. The Heenan family. Like, he brought these guys together. They were all under his employ or whatever, and he managed, like, he had a legit stable of wrestlers, you know.
Right. What was great about his run as, you know, as a manager and with the Heenan family too, is that they played on the fact that he never managed the world champion, and like he would keep bringing these guys in. That's why he brought in King Kong Bundy, because to take down Hogan and Bundy could be champion and Heenan could manage the champ. I guess he did for a quick second when Andre won, but then quickly relinquished it. But Bobby Heenan never managed a world champ. And as great as he was, it was cool that they kind of used that as a story for him.
Right. And I thought that was great too. But that was great too, because Heenan being the guy that wants to take down Hulk Hogan and he can't and keeps bringing in these guys after Hulk Hogan, and Hulk Hogan just keeps toppling them. That was great. That was a great storyline. And it wasn't like a legit storyline. It was just like Heenan's going to keep going after him, which I loved. Okay. One more. I think I have a top five honorable mentions too. So this is going to be great. The Hart Foundation. But I'm talking about the Attitude Era Hart Foundation when they reunited. So Brett Owen, Davey, Jim Neidhart, and Brian Pillman. Now, very
honorable
short
mention.
Because like I said, like Heart Foundation, the tag team, my favorite tag team of all time.
Right.
Heart Foundation as the stable, very short lived. You know, you had the reunited. They were there for what, 97, and then Heart kind of took off. You know, they had that nice little ring. Canadian Stampede is fantastic. It's a great match. If you guys have never seen, having Brian Pillman have, you know, having they're all related by blood or through marriage. They had a great thing where they were like superheroes in Canada, villains in America. But again, it was just a short-lived thing. It was really cool. It was cool as shit. But for me, it was just a little too short-lived. Number three in my honorable mentions list is I'm going to go with an AEW faction, actually. I'm going to go Inner Circle. I'm a really big fan of Inner Circle. But they're another one where the group is, they're 2 years in. They're still fairly new. Jericho, the most successful, obviously, one of the greats. But Santana, Ortiz, Guevara, I think they're still up and coming. And I think they're going to do something. And I hope they don't split them up before they have some real dominance as a team. Great heel team. They seem to be having a great run as a face team. But I'm a big fan. I love Stadium Stampede. I thought that was a lot of fun. That's why they stay in the honorable mentions. Probably in the bottom half. Two on the list of what could have been, but started out red hot, the Nexus.
Mm.
They came in like a house of fire, tearing up the arena, tearing up John Cena and CM Punk.
Vince McMahon's
asses. They beat the shit out of Vince McMahon. They did this great stuff, and then they just crashed and burned. You know? And that SummerSlam match that they talk about, that what was that, the 10-on-10, the 5-on-5, whatever it was?
It was like 10-on-10, I think, yeah.
Where it was the Nexus against the John Cena, his whole contingent. You see Jericho and Edge talk about how Cena should have never won that match for their team. Nexus should have went over every time. Yeah. And Cena was like, no. And Cena was so adamant, saying, no, they'll recover. And they tell you that later on that Cena went up to them and said, you were right. You're absolutely right. They should have won. Because after that, they just crashed and burned. Yeah. And Wade Barrett could have been a world champion during that Nexus run for sure. And then he kind of broke off and they became the core. And it was just a fragment of what they were. They were cool as shit, though. They were really hot for that summer. And
it was also such a unique storyline, too, to take a bunch of guys that none of us had ever seen, none of us had ever heard of. And instead of going the traditional route of, you know, building them up to that level, it was just these guys are like, fuck this, we're taking over now.
Right.
And they were essentially, for, you know, lack of a better term, before that, they were all just jobbers. You know, guys from like independent scenes and you know, the circuits all over the world coming to WWE to compete on the original NXT, which is almost like a game show to see who would win a contract. And then these guys are like, we're just going to tear shit up now. It was very cool. And yeah, people blame John Cena for killing that. But for the time that it was really hot, it was exciting TV.
Yeah, when it was hot, it was really hot. Yeah, like, I don't blame Cena. I say Cena was like, no, I think they'll be fine. And then when he saw what happened after the fact, he was like, fuck, they should have won. And whatever, shit happens. Hindsight being 2020. It is what it is. You can't just be like, well, I need to go over every single time. Whatever. And that was great, too, the fact that they were all on the first season of NXT. Wade Barrett won. Wade Barrett being the leader and took all these guys and said, no, we want a fucking contract and shit. I thought that was great. Last one. And they just made it off the list. I'm talking about a hair. Just. The Undisputed Era. Because I kind of want to save. I'm holding out hope that at some point they reunite, but they reunite on the main roster.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's going to happen. But they're cool as shit. Love them. And I love the fact when they had all the gold at one point, North American world, they had the tag championships at the time. They were great. They were a great team. Had a killer theme song. And they worked well as a unit. When Bobby Fish went down, Adam Cole went in, they won the tag titles with Kyle O'Reilly, and they stuck in Roderick Strong, and they were interchangeable. They could do these great matches. They had three killer War Games matches.
Yep.
Each one better than the last, and they were in the first, you know, what are they, 1 and 2? If I'm correct, right? Or 2 mm-hmm. and...
No, two and 1, right?
I believe so. Yeah, they won the first one, and the last one they won. But they tear it up every single time, and it's never not a show with them. They're a great NXT faction. I'm hoping at some point they come on the main roster. But they just squeaked it out because I'm a huge Undisputed Era fan. I just left them out a smidge. So they make the honorable mentions for me on this case. But I think they're all, any one of them could bump their way into the top five at some point. Who knows? Time will tell. But
my honorable mentions, I got, let's see, 1, 2, 3. Oh, I got 5 here. So I'm going to go with Wyatt family because I think when I think of the Wyatts, I think of such a cool idea, a cool concept, great psychological storylines that fell flat on its face for whatever reason. I just felt like maybe they didn't know what they really had in the way that they booked the Wyatts. And you can probably argue against that. You know, the Wyatts, they had that rivalry with the Shield that they actually won. But it just felt like every time Bray Wyatt was put in a big storyline, he lost. And they just kept splitting them up, kept bringing them back together, splitting them up. Yeah, you know, so I just feel like what could have been there with the Wyatt family. The Ministry of Darkness, because, I mean, the height of the Attitude Era, 1999, they were big. Undertaker was really big at this time. The only reason why I say their honorable mention is because I think their roster was a little weak. You know, Midi and Viscera. Fruk and Bradshaw were cool, but it was just a weak.
No killers except for Undertaker,
yeah,
honestly.
Right, yeah. And the Acolytes, I mean, they were badass. The Nation of Domination, another thing that just kind of, you know, the first incarnation of it was weird because you didn't understand what they were trying to do. Like, you knew that Farouk was all about, you know, Black Power, but he had a very diverse group of people.
Crushing
Savio Vega, so it didn't really make sense.
Right.
But when he brought in, like, Kama, kept D'Lo, brought in Ahmed, that's when you felt like, oh, like, these guys are going to really get to that next level. And then Ahmed got hurt. You know, they brought in The Rock, and then The Rock just kind of took over, and it became – the Nation became something to focus on The Rock.
Right. I wonder what happened to that guy.
Yeah. and another honorable mention I'm going to throw in here is actually from New Japan, and that's LIJ, Los Ingobernables.
Del Japón. Good shit.
I think they're so cool. I love Tetsuya Naito, and I love their attitude. Like, when I really got into New Japan, or got back into it over the last years, same as everybody else, when Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada had their series of matches. But watching Tetsuya Naito, for me, he just felt like he was so much more special than everybody else, as far as, like, his character, his attitude. You know, he was a champion, and he was just, like, throwing the belt and crying. Like, he just didn't give a shit about nothing. And I really, really thought it was cool.
Most personality on that roster.
Yeah, he's definitely the most personality.
Shit about, in terms of, like, he has, like, a character.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's interesting. Not only can he wrestle his ass off, but he's interesting as hell. And,
right.
Like, when I saw him, his entrance alone, the suit and all that stuff, I remember, like, you know, they did, like, an introduction, and he walked back out of the ring, walked up the ramp, and walked back down, and made him introduce him again. Like, that shit is great. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. To me, he's one of the best that they had.
And it's great because it stems from his character stems from when they were first trying to build him up, and the fans, like, didn't care. So he kind of, you know, he turned his back on them, and he was like, you don't care about me, I don't care about you, I don't care about the company, I don't care about these belts, nothing. Like, it's just cool.
And then naming their faction after Spanish.
In Spanish,
like,
yeah.
Spanish, as opposed to Japanese. I think that's cool, too. Anyway.
So that's my honorable mentions, 5 there.
Okay. So, yeah, let's do our 5. We'll start with number 5. Why don't you go first, man, since you just let us off there.
So number 5 or top 5?
Number 5. We'll go from 5 to 1. That's what we'll do. We'll work our way down.
Number 5, I'm going to say the Undisputed Era.
Ooh.
And it's because for the last few years, they have been the number one reason to watch NXT. So I'll leave it at that. I mean, I think they're an awesome group. Every one of those guys is a top guy as far as NXT goes. Them going to the main roster makes me nervous because they're all small guys, especially Adam Cole. But there's no denying the talent that they are and the stars that they are. They were almost like a modern kind of throwback to the NWO, just the way that they took over and just their swag. So they're number 5 on my list.
Yeah, they just, like I said, they just squeaked it out for me, man. I love them. All right, number five for me, I'm going the Shield. And in the last few years, there's been very few factions in WWE, but this is the one that made an immediate impact. Taking out all these guys, they went undefeated for a very, very long stretch. I was there for their first match at TLC at the Barclays Center when they took out Team Hell No and Ryback. I was there when WrestleMania, and I just feel like, you know, I measured it like this. Like, the matches I love seeing and the three of them that went on, they all became probably my favorite wrestlers. Moxley and Rollins and Reigns, when they split up, became phenomenal singles wrestlers that I ended up just loving all three of them. And when they reunited, I remember being so hyped when they reunited. And that first Raw after they reunited, when they walked back out of the crowd, I remember being like, just being like, holy shit, this is awesome. And I thought they were fantastic, honestly. I've never seen a group like that in, at least in this modern day, come on like they did, be as successful as they did, and be still successful now. Every single member of the faction is pretty much a Hall of Famer now at this point. You know, I mean, it's still years on, but I think, you know, Moxley right now, what he's doing in AEW, what he did in the past, every one of them is a world champion, intercontinental champion. They're all Grand Slam winners. Except for, I think, Rollins never had the – oh, no, Rollins did have the IC. Yeah, so all of them are Grand Slam champions. Mm-hmm. They've all faced Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, which is a nice feather in the cap. You know, Money in the Bank winners. And then at one point at Money in the Bank, all three of them held the world title.
Yep.
That's amazing, right? I mean, that's great. And they put on great matches, and they're still great. And you see what Reigns is doing now. You see what Rollins is doing now. You see what Moxley is doing there. I love them. Fantastic. So they're my number five. It was hard to put them at number five, though. I gotta be honest. But yeah, they're definitely there. That's my number five. Let's go four.
Number four, I am going the Hart Foundation from the Attitude Era. Mm. And I put them on here because, yeah, you know, you said they had a short run, and that's true. But their run, you know, being heroes in Canada and heels, the villains in America, was completely organic. It was not planned whatsoever. And it became the Kickstarter to what the Attitude Era would eventually be. Mm. And it made Bret Hart a heel for the first time in a long time, and a good heel. You know, he was cutting his best promos. He was doing his best work. And the Hart Foundation, they were the number one draw for them in 97 until the whole, you know, thing in Montreal. So yeah, so they're number four on my list.
I see. Oh, that's why you said when you're like honorable mention. But yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that. But for me, it's like when I'm looking at these, when I was making this list and I'm looking at these, like, oh man, these factions that I love, like, for me it was just like that, just Reign was like a little too short for me. But yeah, you're absolutely right. They came on and I loved the difference between Canada and America, where it was just like they would do Raw, and they did Raw a lot more in Canada during that era.
Mm-hmm. For that reason, yeah.
And like they would be cheered, and Austin would be booed out of the fucking building, Michaels would be booed out of the building, and then they get to America and they're being cheered, and the Hart Foundation moved out of the building. We don't see that no more.
No.
We don't want to lean on like the whole foreign invasion stuff anymore as they used to. I think the last time I saw it happen was with Rusev, and that still worked kind of well, but I mean, who, they don't do it anymore. Number four for me is the Four Horsemen. I just, dude, just everything about this group just oozes cool as shit. And I'm not even talking about wrestling. Like, you see these guys, and my favorite iteration of the Horsemen is the one that went into the Hall of Fame, the Wyndham, Arn, Tully, Flair.
Yeah, that's the best one.
Because I'm not the biggest Ole Anderson fan, not a fan of the character you hear after the fact, but I was just a fan of him. Yeah. Great wrestler, whatever. But then, you know, like the Stings and the Lugers and everybody who came in. This was probably the definitive group for me. That's the definitive group. But like Arn Anderson, first of all, is probably one of the most underrated wrestlers of all time. He could put on the match. He can cut the great promo. He's one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. Cool as shit. And then you have fucking Ric Flair, the man, mm-hmm. probably the GOAT in most people's eyes. Tully Blanchard, too, unsung hero of that group. That dude, singles or tag with Arn, fantastic. Just, dude, what a great wrestler. I'm so glad he's getting his shine in AEW right now with FTR and that group. And then Wyndham was a great pure wrestler, but lacked the charisma and the promo, and the Four Horsemen elevated that for him. Being with them made him cool and elevated his character, because then he was just that good old Southern boy who could wrestle his ass off. You know what I mean? But to me, it's just like when you think of factions, this always comes to mind. And this too, just the four, the relaxed fans. Yeah.
It's a great symbol. Like,
fucking awesome, man. The Four Horsemen. Dude, I mean, and if I had to pick another group of the Four Horsemen over the years, it'd probably be the group later on when Benoit was part of the group.
Malenko.
It was Benoit, Malenko, Flair, and then Arn was like the manager. But I also liked the group that had Mongo McMichael in, I'm not going to lie. So as crazy as Mongo was, I did like that group. And I hope, you know, best wishes to Mongo McMichael. I know he's going through some health issues right now, ALS and stuff like that. But he and the Mongo and Friends Twitter handle, if you've never seen that, is fantastic. Dude, yeah, Four Horsemen for me at number four. I didn't plan it to be Four Horsemen at four, just the way it worked out. But, yeah, that's it for me.
Number three for me is Four Horsemen.
Oh.
So, yeah, just to, again, piggyback off you a little bit. Another thing about the Four Horsemen is, I mean, they were a faction that lasted. They came and went a few times, but they lasted since, what, the early to mid-80s. There was very short periods of time where none of them had titles. I just felt like their entire run, they always had a belt, whether it was, you know, the tag belts, or Tully had the TV belt, or Wyndham had the U.S., or then Arn had the TV, and Tully had the U.S., Flair was the world champ. Like, they were always running with the titles.
Yeah.
But another thing that when I thought about them, putting them on this list is, and I think Flair said it once, or maybe Arn in an interview, but when they brought him back in, like, 99, when the NWO thing started getting a little stale, their ratings started, you know, WWE was catching up and beating them. They said, I know how we can freshen things up or liven things up. Let's bring the Horsemen back. And the Horsemen was used as a tool to just gain interest because everybody just wanted to see them.
Right.
So, yeah, that's another reason why they're on my list.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely. And I think I'm looking up a picture of the Four Horsemen now, and there's a picture of them and the group we were just talking about. And Arn and Tully, the tag champions, Flair is the world champion, and Wyndham is the United States champion. And when you think of them, you just think of the pedigree, you think of just having all the gold. And I think that's what I loved about the Undisputed Era, too, that they put the value in the group to give them. And it's not because, like, oh, they have all the titles. But it's like the group is so good that they could do that. You know, and I think that's the best part. And that's why I loved when they had that little run, too, and it was, like, Undisputed Gold and everything like that. I thought it was cool as shit.
Who do you think was the worst member of the Horsemen?
Paul Roma.
I knew that was going to be the answer.
Fucking pretty Paul Roma. Worse than Mongo, because at least Mongo McMichael had personality. And he had Deborah.
Roma had the look, though.
He had the look, and that's it. I mean, like, yo, don't be wrong. The dude could wrestle.
Yeah.
He had no personality and nothing. I remember when they teased it. And it's even in the Four Horsemen DVD. They teased who's the new member of the faction. And it's like, oh, it's pretty Paul Roma. And Triple H is like,
the jobber.
WWE. Like, he's actually right. Yeah. Like, come on, man.
That's funny. Poor Paul.
Yeah. Shout out to Paul Roma. If you're listening right now, I highly doubt it. But number three for me is D-Generation X. DX for short. I love DX, but I can't explain why I put them at three without explaining my number one. But when you think Attitude Era and you think of that time frame, DX is that group. Their feud with the Nation of Domination. And I'm talking about, like, the original group with Sean and Hunter and Rude and China was cool. But when Sean left and it was Hunter and the New Age Outlaws and X-Pac and China, that's the group right there.
Yeah.
WCW, just doing all that crazy shit every week. Like, just... you know, well, which is frowned upon now, but, you know, impersonating the Nation of Domination, which I thought was fantastic at the time, you know, like I said, getting on the tank, going to WCW, or, you know, just the whole movement, man. The crowd was into it, you know, like, they loved it. The theme song alone just gets you in the mood every time. Every time you hear Are You Ready, it's like, holy shit. Like, it just everything about them was cool as shit. And this is, you know, still young in Hunter's career. So he was like European champion and then IC champion. Unfortunately, he got hurt. And the New Age Outlaws was just coming up as that awesome tag team. And then you had X-Pac holding down that light heavyweight, still could go. And then he started doing the whole European title thing as well. Like, they were a great group. But they were a great faction too. Like, they felt like, you know, you have these factions sometimes where they put together and you could tell, like, why would these guys ever go together? They don't feel it. And, like, with them, like, they were all friends behind the scenes. It just felt natural. You know what I mean? It was just cool as hell, and you could tell that they were friends. You like for instance, like the way I equate that too is like, would you ever see these guys at a bar all drinking together at the end of the show? And you would for DX. You know, you may not see it for like, you know, another group that got forced together, but these are the cool, and they were cool as shit. And they could wrestle their ass off. They were probably the definitive faction of the Attitude Era for WWE, honestly. You know?
Yeah, and that's why they're my number two. So number two is D-Generation X. And it's more so, I mean, yeah, they were all great wrestlers. I mean, they're all Hall of Famers. Triple H is one of the greatest of all time. And they were the definitive Attitude Era group. But when you talk DX, every segment that they did was memorable. My favorite one is when they tried to invade Nitro. You know, but just everything that they did was out of the box. It was controversial, sure, but that's what they were at that time. And it was pushing the envelope. It was getting people riled up and getting people to talk about them. And that's what you wanted to do. You wanted to watch Raw. Yeah, we wanted to watch Raw to see Austin, but you were also watching to tune in to see what DX was going to do that night. Super influential, and they're my number two.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You can't think of Attitude Era and not think of DX. Yeah, and you're talking about influence on other factions. Absolutely. So here's my number two. It's going to be it might be a little controversial, but I was thinking about this when I was putting it together, and I absolutely love this group. I actually do like it more than DX, and I'll explain why in a minute. My number two is Evolution. I absolutely love Evolution. To me, this was a modern day Four Horsemen. I thought for sure when Flair came back at some point, they were going to reform like a modern day Four Horsemen with Flair as like the J.J. Dillon of the group.
Right.
And when they brought him in as the wrestler and when it was Batista and Orton and Triple H, I was like, oh, they're definitely going to call themselves the Four Horsemen. When they called themselves Evolution, I was like, I like that. They didn't lean on the Four Horsemen tradition. They did their own thing. And at the time, like Triple H was the world champion. And then at some point, again, talk about all the gold. Batista and Flair were tag champions. A young up-and-coming Randy Orton had a great Intercontinental Championship run.
Yeah.
And then I look at the pieces that came out, and Triple H handpicked these guys, him and Flair. I want Batista. I want Orton. They're going to develop those guys. And look what he did. Batista, world champion, Hall of Famer. Randy Orton is might tie Hall of Famer. Flair for world championships with Cena, and future Hall of Famer his own right. Triple H, we know Triple H is a pedigree, no pun intended, but like you know what it is. It speaks for itself. This group was awesome. I thought this group was fantastic.
Absolutely. And how crazy is it that it wasn't originally Batista, it was Mark Jindrak?
Right, exactly. Now imagine that group with Jindrak in this case. And I love watching that Ruthless Aggression show when they talk about Jindrak and Triple H just saying, like Triple H knowing from the jump when they're shooting the video for the entrance video, and he knows it's not going to work. He's just like, yo, just shoot it with me, Randy, and Flair. I know it's not going to work. Like he knew. He just felt it. Because Batista was hurt at the time, you know, and also, so, and then, you know, Jindrak was like a goofball with Randy, but imagine that though. And look what they went to today. Like, you know, Batista, where he is, and you know, Flair's one of the goats. But I absolutely love this group. I love the fucking theme. The theme song's cool as shit. The theme song plays a factor in a faction.
Absolutely.
Think about that for a minute. The Shield, the Four Horsemen, DX, and now Evolution. Motorhead doing that thing. And Motorhead, I think he said this and King of Kings are his two favorite ones. He doesn't even like the original Triple H theme song. it was just awesome at the time. At the time when they all had the goal together, it was, again, like I was waiting for that modern day Four Horsemen, and they just took it and cranked it up.
Yeah.
And every one of them are superstars now. So I don't know. I loved Evolution, man. It's they're number two for sure.
And it was cool that we got to see them take on the Shield. You know, two generations colliding.
Right, exactly. That was cool as shit, too. You know, Flair obviously not going to participate in that. And what I loved about those guys, too, now that you mentioned that, was the fact that they didn't let the Shield, but the Shield getting the clean sweep on them. That last match that they did together, the elimination match. And it was like, oh, maybe they'll do something. And they did the clean sweep, and they really put the Shield over. And then, you know, the next night, Rollins turns on fucking Shield. But I thought that was cool as hell. And when they came back together, when Batista had that last little run, I thought that was awesome. You know, like you said too, like just having those beautiful, like those moments where like they could come back together years later, you know, I'm honestly surprised. The SmackDown, what was it? The SmackDown anniversary where they kind of set up Batista versus Triple H like a few months before. I love that too. And they tried to do it again, but then Randy Orton wasn't a part of it. Like, he wanted to do Radio RKO. Like, they've never retread Evolution. It was that group for that time, and they all went their separate ways. They never tried to do another, you know, they just reunited once. They never tried to do like another incarnation where Triple H took like two other guys and tried to keep going. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. Which I don't know. They were just great. So yeah, that's why I actually put them at number two there.
Not a bad choice. Number one, I mean, it should be obvious at this point. It's the New World Order. I mean, there's probably no more influential storyline and group than the NWO. The way it was done, the way it was executed. And as I said earlier, without Scott Hall coming through that crowd and everybody going, what the hell is going on? Who knows what wrestling would have been if it would have reached that peak? You know, there's always that what if factor. And yeah, maybe Austin would have blew up regardless, but we don't know that, because the NWO being as popular as it was is what pushed WWE to get to the lengths that they got to, because they were almost put out of business by WCW with the NWO storyline. I know the NWO did get stale because it was a group that anybody could join at some point, but that original incarnation of the NWO, you know, Hall and Nash, and then Hogan, the unthinkable Hogan turning on the fans, even though the fans were booing the shit out of him for a while, turning on the fans, becoming the bad guy, telling everybody that he was only telling everyone to say their prayers and eat their vitamins for the money, and just telling everyone that he's actually a piece of shit. You know, then X-Pac joining as six, and, you know, Rude being a part of it, and the way that they would take over and just, you know, come to Nitro and destroy everybody. That one of the famous things is when Kevin Nash threw Rey Mysterio against the truck like a lawn dart.
He fucking lawn darted him right through the trailer.
You know, but they would come lay everybody out, and it felt 100% real. Like in 1996, we were 11 years old, and it felt real. Like every time the NWO came out and the whole WCW locker room came out to try to stop them, you felt like something real was happening.
You want to talk about making movies, right? That believability factor was crazy. Right. Like, you talk about that Rey Mysterio lawn dart, because they're my number one as well. That Rey Mysterio lawn dart, right? People nearby called the cops.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Said that there was something going on. Like, they thought it was a legit invasion. Like, these guys just came on the set and started beating their wrestlers up, you know? And I love that, too. I love that whole WCW versus NWO thing. I love the fact that it wasn't, like, Diesel. It was Kevin Nash. It wasn't Razor Ramon. It was Scott Hall. You know what I mean? Like, they're real names, making it real. You know, and when Hogan joined, that Hogan, the Hogan thing put him over the top. You want to talk about one of the greatest baby faces of all time, turning his back on the crowd, you know, and it had to be Hogan. I know people say like, oh, yeah, it was supposed to be Sting, and Bischoff, I said it too, was supposed to be Sting. If it ain't Hogan, I don't know if it has that much of an impact, bro. Like, you know, and Hogan ends up crafting himself into one of the greatest heels of all time.
Yep.
You know, and this is why I put them at number one and DX is at my number three. Without the NWO, there's no Attitude Era. Without NWO, there's no DX.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, because at the time when NWO was coming into prominence, WWE is still doing their cartoon character bullshit. You know, yeah. It forced WWE to step their game up. It forced WWE, or Vince McMahon in particular, to say, I'm sorry, I haven't been listening to you guys. We're going to do more realistic storylines. We're going to do this. We're going to have more say of you. We're going to change everything around. And then when they did that, they had that WWE machine, and they had Austin, and Austin versus McMahon and everything like that. Austin McMahon doesn't come around. NWO don't come around. You'll probably still have Austin 316, but you might not have that feud. You might not have the Ministry of Darkness. You might not have no DX. You might not have no Nation of Domination, because we're not taking risks. They need to take a risk to compete, because they were, you know, as Bischoff likes to famously say, they were taking the water coolers out of the building. They were losing money. Yeah. They're on the verge of, you know, possible bankruptcy, maybe, right? If this group doesn't come out, and yes, I agree with you completely. Like, does it get, after a while, because I know they were trying to make it its own entity and its own show. So like it was just like, oh yeah, here's an NWO shirt. You know, here Ray Traylor, here Scott Norton, here Vincent. Like everybody was part of the NWO. You know, Michael Wall Street at one point. Like, you know, like the IRS. It did get overblown. But to me, when it was the three of them, and then they added six, and then Ted DiBiase at one point, which was cool, and so they kind of phased him out. Dude, that was the coolest fucking group. I still have, I had NWO shirts. They were on sale at Kmart when I was a kid, right? I remember getting one, a Wolfpack shirt at the time, because they had split and the black and white. Black and white's the best one. And then I remember years later, this is last year's SummerSlam, right? I had family coming over, like, oh, wear wrestling t-shirts. The first thing I did was I bought me and my wife an NWO shirt. I bought my son, my four-year-old, his own NWO youth shirt. And I bought my, at the time, four-month-old son an NWO onesie. And we all had NWO shirts on. And this is 2020.
Yeah, because it doesn't get old. That's that part
and
of it.
And it's like still fucking cool.
Yeah.
Their influence goes from 97 to 2020, probably beyond. My son grows up and he goes, too sweet, me, Dad. Like, what? Like, he knows what the NWO is. He knows Scott Hall. He knows Kevin Nash. He knows Hogan. He knows the NWO. And that's 97. I show him matches all the time. You know, it wasn't the greatest matches we've ever seen, but it was the influence. It was the promos, dude, the black and white with the cutaways, invading the show, like you said, into invading Nitro at the end and just tearing down the set. The fucking crowd throwing the cups and batteries.
Oh, my God, the amount of shit they would throw, yeah.
Like, you know, the Georgia Dome match with Goldberg selling out, right? And then you had the year-long thing with Sting being in the crowd. That shit was cool as hell. There was a point where I used to do watch Raw and record. This is how it's showing the age here. Record Nitro on another TV on VHS. It got to the point where I would watch Nitro instead live, record Raw on VHS, because every week, every Monday, Nitro was cool as hell. You never knew it was going to happen. You know, and then you had the Luchador matches on top of that, and the NWO was just throughout the entire fucking show. It was still cool.
And how about this, too? You talked about the skit with DX impersonating the Nation of Domination, which is now, you're not going to see that on Peacock because of the blackface, and to me that's understandable, but we're not talking about that. The DX did that. NWO did it first when NWO impersonated the Four Horsemen,
and that shit was funny as hell too.
And yeah, so that just goes to show that, like, and I'm sure people within the WWE be like, no, we didn't copy them. It's like, yes, you did. You got the idea from them, and maybe the NWO got it from somebody else. For us as fans, the first time that we saw something like that was when the NWO did it. When they made fun of Kurt Hennig and Arn Anderson and Ric Flair. You know, Six having he's dressed up as Ric Flair and he's spraying the water on his eyes, making fun of Flair because Flair was always crying. You know, that we don't get that nation skit. We don't get that corporation skit when they impersonated the corporation, D-Generation X, without that original one with NWO making fun of the Four Horsemen. So.
And we talk about, again, the people taking offense to it, right? Arn Anderson was cool with it, and then all of a sudden he gets pissed off. Ric Flair was pissed off after the fact, you know? And I know years later, Flair would say that the NWO was a terrible group because it was like, who did they put over? They didn't put over anybody, and that's the whole point of a heel group. And it's like, okay, I get what you're saying, but, you know, you still had those Sting feuds, everything, but it's like, they were just licensed to print money. They were cool as hell. We used to wear NWO shirts to school like it was nothing. And I remember, God, what was the science teacher's name in seventh grade that we would too sweet him during assembly and shit. And like he would walk around with the wolf pack ears and everything and walk around. And he'd be like, sweet, all the time. God, I forget his name. Oh, I'm so sorry. He was cool as hell. But we would be sitting in the auditorium wearing NWO. The dude's freaking too sweetness. And like, that's how cool it was. You know what I mean? And then eventually DX came in and everyone's crotch chopping it, you know, after the fact. You know what I'm saying? But like, I know WWE ended up taking over, whatever. But if it's not for them, we don't have any of that, dude.
Right. We don't. And Flair can, you know, he's obviously entitled to his opinion. But you can say, oh, well, they never put anyone over. That's because the number one reason why we watch Nitro was to see the NWO.
Absolutely. I wasn't watching Raven's Flock.
Right. We weren't watching The Flock. We weren't watching everything else was cool. The Luchadors, like you said, the Cruiserweight matches were great. They were probably always the best match on the card. But they had to build the NWO to where they needed to get to be so that Sting could be the guy to come in and stop them. That was the whole point to Sting's year-long disappearance and turning into the Crow. And in between then, you know, they were putting guys over. I mean, Luger beat Hogan for the title, and then Hogan won it back. You know, there's that whole sold-out pay-per-view where NWO lost, like, all the matches. It was supposed to be an NWO-themed pay-per-view, and they're losing the matches. You can listen to Kevin Nash talk about that, how he thought it was the dumbest thing. So maybe Flair saying that, it's not 100% true, but they were the number one reason why people watched, and they needed to be as big as they possibly could by beating everybody so that Sting can come in and beat Hogan. And that probably should have been the end of NWO, but it wasn't. It went on for another year or two.
Yeah, and then they did a bunch of different incarnations. Jarrett was in the NWO and Bret Hart was in the NWO.
That's when they started
to put in, then they tried to do it in Impact and called themselves the Band.
WWE brought it back.
Yeah, and that was ended up being a failure too. Because then Booker T was part of it and everything like that. It was never gonna be as cool or as relevant as that beginning in 97. You know, and again, you try to rehash it over and over again. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. The rehash for DX always works for some reason. The NWO never did. You know, and it might be some other things we need to explore, storyline issues and substance abuse issues and people not really being 100%, injuries and the like and everything like that.
Kevin Nash got hurt.
Yeah, but maybe 18 kind of flipping it on its head, you know, like the other stuff, yeah.
But I do remember when they were going to bring it back and Vince was doing those promos when he was talking to himself in the mirror.
Oh, I'm going to kill it.
I'm going to kill it, yeah.
Yeah.
Then he said, me and the NWO. And I remember being at your house watching No Way Out 2002 and watching Hogan, Hall, and Nash come out and thinking this is like the coolest thing ever because I was so excited to see what they would do. And it didn't last long. But for that moment, when they went to the WWE, it was very exciting.
The influences reach. And when you, like I just said, if you listen to Scott Hall on a recent 83 Weeks podcast, he says he still makes six figures every year. That's incredible.
That's crazy.
He doesn't wrestle no more.
He doesn't have to.
So, yeah, I mean, there it is. That's the five. That's unbelievable. That's a couple of similarities, couple of differences, couple of different honorable mentions. Where are you guys at Wrestling Guys PC? Top five, top three, top one? Who cares? Let us know. I have two questions for you before we close this out. I'll do the first one. Actually, you know what? I'm lying. I'm going to go three. First question would be hard to be a two-part. That's what I'm counting. One is, what is maybe an underrated faction that we did not bring up on this list that you think maybe doesn't belong on this list but was a pretty cool faction? And it could be any promotion. It doesn't have to be WWE or WCW in this case.
How about the Right to Censor?
It was funny. I was thinking about them, too. That's funny that you said that.
I mean, they were... First of all, they were kind of ahead of its time, if you think about it, right? I mean, it's the year 2000. Again, it's still the Attitude Era, so they're pushing boundaries. And you have this group that's come out and saying, hang on a second, you can't do any of this. This is all offensive. You can't do any of these things. But it worked. And you wanted to hate them. They were so hateable. That's because they were good heels. People kind of shit on them, and I think that's unfair. Like, they were a really good group because
you hated
the shit out of them.
Absolutely. I thought that was cool. Yeah, you know what's funny? When I thought of the question for you, they were the first ones that popped in my head. But given the fact that you said them, you know what? There's a couple. I really enjoyed the League of Nations faction. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, the League of Nations.
Right. Where it was Del Rio, Rusev, Sheamus,
Barrett.
And Barrett. I love Ray Barrett, by the way. I thought that could have been a really cool-ass group. They had a nice little run for a little bit where, like, Sheamus was world champ and Rusev was United States champ and stuff like that. But, again, it's kind of just another one that fizzled and died out. But I I'm going to go more recent here. Dude, the Hurt Business was cool as shit. Yeah. I really like the Hurt Business, man, and I hate that they split them up so fast. I thought there was a lot more potential there. I feel like they could still keep going right now. Dude, I really liked it. And I wish they would have given them some more time. And that's just two that come off in the off the top of my head too. The Latino World Order was cool as shit too, but they were kind of weird. But LWO for life, how you doing? all right. So now the second part to this question is, what is the worst faction of all time?
Oh, the worst faction.
I got one. Right.
I feel like that should be easier, but I can't think.
I got one right now. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
The Misfits in Action. MIA.
At least they were like kind of silly fun though.
Right. But General Huge Erection.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Corporal Cajun, Lieutenant Loco. The fact that they gave him a U.S. title run, Hugh Morris, that was like just, it was just so weird. Major Guns, I take my top off so you can see my bikini and stuff like that. The Misfits in Action, one of the worst. I wouldn't say the worst because there's been worse. the Dark Carnival, ICP mm-hmm. and Vampiro. It's mostly WCW at this point. the Filthy Animals had a cool group, but they called themselves the Filthy Animals, and they were just weird. And I don't know if you remember this one from WWE, but the Union.
I do.
And Shamrock, Test, Big Show and Mankind. It was a short-lived group.
Very short-lived, yeah, because it didn't work.
Yeah, it was so weird. And the Job Squad.
But I got them though. Like they
was
were
cool, but it's like, what was the point of putting them together if they're gonna start fighting each other immediately? A few ones that I have at the top of my head.
How about this though? And I just thought of it when you mentioned those groups from WCW, and they're not the worst group. So we talked about the Nexus. What about the Natural Born Thrillers?
Oh man, you know what though? They had some potential there.
They did, but they were the same as the Nexus, right? They were a group of young, unheard of wrestlers that came in and just, you know, wanted to take over WCW.
Fucking above average Mike Sanders.
Above average Mike Sanders.
Reno, Mark Jindrak,
Sean O'Hare,
and Chuck Palumbo.
Yeah.
And
Sean Stasiak.
Sean Stasiak. So a lot of them most of them don't wrestle no more. Think about that. But you're right. Young up and coming guys that wanted to prove a point, so they all formed a faction together to do something. And they had something going there. Because Mike Sanders did have some type of personality. He could cut a promo.
Yeah.
Jindrak and O'Hare is like what could have been. I feel like they could have been a good tag team, but then they immediately like split them up and then put O'Hare Palumbo, which was weird. Stasiak is a chiropractor now. Sean O'Hare no longer with us. Palumbo has since retired and stuff like that. They all had some prominent WWE careers. That's another one, too. But I can never get over the fact that he called himself above average Mike Sanders.
Yeah, but they had, as terrible as WCW was in its final 2 years, they weren't terrible to watch.
No, they were excited. They had really good moves. They could pull out the good match. It was just weird. It was just a weird pairing.
So now I got a question for you before we sign off.
Mm.
Excluding the groups that we named, can you think of a group that was the most underutilized or mishandled group of all time?
For me, would be the Wyatt family.
Okay.
For me, because the start-stop pushes, the fact that they would get into, with the exception of the Shield feud, which was a really good set of matches. If you haven't seen them, you need to go watch those, where they actually came out on top and made the Shield question if they still wanted to be a group. They would start a feud with somebody. Bray would lose the first two matches and then win the third every time. And then they broke them up.
Yeah.
And then they brought them back together. And then they put one on another show, and they brought Braun Strowman in. Then they split him off. And then it was Rowan got hurt, and then it was Harper and Orton and Bray. And they had a really good storyline going in. The matches were lackluster, and they had a point where they could have did. Harper was such a good, and rest in peace, man, Brody Lee, but like he was such a good worker that it should have been a triple threat match for the title. It should have been Orton, Harper, and Bray at WrestleMania when Bray was the champion, and they kind of aced him out, and it was just like start stop. They never got any momentum. They never put 100% that they should have put into them, because Bray could have been that next Undertaker-esque, and I use that term loosely, but like when I think about that, like an otherworldly character, the way he was almost like this cult figure, but maybe kind of supernatural at the same time. And they just never put any steam behind him. When they did, they cut his legs out from underneath him. He would just lose matches every single time. And I'm not a big proponent of wins and losses, but when he's constantly losing, that's when you're like, well, what the fuck are we doing it with this guy?
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, it's
the same thing with his Fiend character. The Fiend character is cool as shit. He won the Universal title, and then it's like we're cutting his legs out from underneath him. And they had such good chemistry. And even like when Harper and Rowan were the Bludgeon Brothers, like, you know, they had really good matches. Rowan got hurt, and then when they got back together, they split them off again. You know, it's like they never put any momentum behind them, and I think they're one of the most mishandled groups. I'll tell you this, and before too much of a tangent here, but there was a promo in NXT where it's Bray Wyatt and the Cottonwood. That's when the first iteration when Bray started coming out. And I remember catching this promo on YouTube, and he reminded me immediately of Waylon Mercy and Max Cady from Cape Fear with Robert De Niro's character. And I saw this, and I'm like, this fucking character is cool as hell. And I was like, I hope they don't fuck this up. and he came to WWE. And the whole thing, you know, the whole we're here, blowing out the thing and the music and the fans would be into it. And they bungled it, man. Like, that's the only way I can say it. What about you? What do you think?
So, excluding the ones that we've already talked about, there's one group that was short-lived, which is why I'm mentioning them, because they were doing some cool stuff. But it was back in 2003, and it was a group that the WWE actually took from ECW. And it was their version of the FBI, the Full-Blooded Italians. It was Nunzio, Chuck Palumbo, and Johnny Stamboli. But they were cool. They were doing cool things where they were like, they were hired hitmen, and they were whacking people. Like, I remember they were trying to plead a case to Vince McMahon about something, like why he should hire them to take out somebody else. And they were like, look at this package. They made a video package of everybody that they had whacked. And it was like Undertaker, and it was all these, you know, top guys that they were attacking. And then it was like a graphic would come up and it would say whacked. You know, it was like, that was cool stuff. And then the next week it was like they were gone. And you were like, what happened? Like, why did they stop this? So
that it's amazing to me how they do that. You'll see that, you know, like the Fashion Files and Fandango and Brand Breeze recently released, how they were cool as hell. They were on SmackDown, prominent placement, and then they just disappeared. And then they're on NXT. Yeah, I mean, you see, you do see a lot. I mean, if you want to talk about Mismatch, and I know I said Wyatt Family, but I couldn't help but not mention them. But think about like a group like the Straight Edge Society.
Yeah.
Which was kind of cool, man, with CM Punk, with his religious aspect and being straight edge and everything like that. But they got scared.
Right.
You know, because of the religion aspect and all this other stuff and, you know, committing yourself One Nation under Punk and having Joey Mercury shave his head and having Serena Deeb shave her head and having Luke Gallows, who was Festus, and saying, well, the reason why he was all dumb like that is because he was addicted to drugs. Like, that, I thought that was cool as hell. And they just got cold feet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They were scared. And then they just kind of went off with it. And Punk, who could talk his way out of a fucking brown paper bag, he's a great promo. You know, I think about the, now that you mentioned like a thing like an FBI, like when I think about that, I think about like a Straight Edge Society, like what could have been, you know what I mean? Yeah. And there's so many of those groups where you're like, oh, this could be cool as hell, like a League of Nations, and it was like it just fizzled, man. It was just like, what could have been? And that's what bothers me so much, I think, now in more recent months about the Hurt Business, you know. And I think back to thinking about the Jericho podcast with Lana. And he says, like, if the Inner Circle was in WWE, we would have been broken up in 3 months. He's like, we're together 2 years now. And there's really not that there's no end in sight, but we're just reaching where we could be. Yeah. You know, he's like, if this is all WWE, they'd be like, all right, listen, we're splitting Santana Ortiz off here. You and Guevara are going to feud, and then that's the end of it. And we're never going to see them again. And he's like, you know, and he even mentioned it. A guy who's in AEW still watches WWE. He said, look at the Hurt Business. They split them up. They were really great. And he's like, and now Shelton and Cedric are not doing anything.
Yeah.
You know,
it's sad.
It's horrible. And sometimes it's great because a guy like Shelton Benjamin, who wasn't being used.
Right. And then he finally was. Yeah.
And then there it is. Yeah. Okay. So last question I have for the night. Last question. And this is not from me. This is from WWE. But I thought it was cool. As I was talking to a friend of the show, Al Mugg. Shout out to you. But he sent me this great, great message before. And I'm going to read it to you here. It's a post from WWE. It says, if you could pick, and this is not, so I'm sorry, I apologize. This is from Wrestling Inc. This is not WWE. But if there was an all-women NWO, which three would you pick?
Three women.
WWE. Three women.
You're going to have
your Hogan, your Hall, and your Nash to start the revolution.
Based on character right now, Bailey would be one. I'm not, and I know you're gonna hate me for this because you hate when I say I'm not a big fan of Sasha. But I haven't always been the biggest fan of Bailey character wise, but I think her character now is better than it's ever been. So I would put her in there.
Now, is Bailey your Hogan of the group?
I would say so. I would say she's the leader, right? So Bailey, man, I'm trying to think of like. Just who looks the part. I want to say Zelina Vega as another one. Because I think she's just got such charisma about her. You know, maybe I would put... If I could re-sign Ruby Riott, maybe I would put her in there.
Really? All right, so I'll tell you what I told him before. So this is what me and him agreed upon. Shout out to Al Muggs. So our Scott Hall would be Sasha Banks, right? Cut the promo, come in, stir some shit up, blah, 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 right? I got a big surprise for you. Who's our big surprise? We're doing Rhea Ripley as our Nash, right? Young up-and-comer, big, powerful, kick some ass. Who's our Hogan? Who's the third man? Charlotte Flair. So Charlotte Flair is our third man as our Hogan, right? So now this is why I left Bayley out, because I do like Bayley in that role, but her character is really cool, but it's more like a sarcastic little bit. Like, it doesn't fit in with the coolness of the NWO. So I'm giving her the face turn and turning her into DDP. She's the DDP to our foil of our female NWO. Now you need a Sting. So who's our Sting? A returning Becky Lynch.
Coming into feud
with, you know, maybe sitting in the rafters in the Thunderdome or something like that. With those three ladies, and then you have your who's going to spark it off and get the first hit on them. It's going to be our face turn Bayley. Of course, you know, this is fantasy booking from our chairs here, but that's who I chose as my three. Thinking, I'm like, you need a powerful, like, who's the top woman in WWE right now? And you're like, oh, Charlotte's been the top woman for however long, right? So who's the third man? Like, you, it just feels like you need something like, and it's Charlotte Flair too, her dad used to be with the NWO. Oh, whatever. What a knife in the gut even further to that family dynamic, huh? So, yeah, I'm going with that. Where are you guys at? At Wrestling Guys PC, you need an all-female NWO. Who's your Hall Nash and your Hogan? I went a little extra mile and did the Stings and the DDPs, but that was just because we were having a discussion before. But, yeah, man, I enjoyed this. This was cool. I just love talking about all things factions. But don't remember, we got our Lex Express episode coming up. As soon as they drop this fucking Icons episode, definitely want to see some. I'm looking forward to actually watching it, because I know he's really turned his life around. And I just want to, you know, hear what he has to say. I don't want to just hear about the Elizabeth stuff. I do want to hear about how he views his earlier career now, in retrospective to where he is as a person. You know what I mean? I know people have talked that a lot about against him, but I will say, Luger is probably an underrated performer.
Well, see, he's almost like an anomaly, right? Because Luger was not really the best worker. He never really had a lot of personality. And I think he is the ultimate example of someone who has made a great career off of the potential of having a great career. You know, Jim Ross once said, you can't buy groceries forever on potential. Well, Lex Luger did. And I think that makes him unique in that sense.
I do think he could put on the good match, but it depends on the dance partner as usual. Flair made him look good. Sting made him look good. Yep. Yoko made him look good. You know, again, depends on that. But I think he's also a classic example of too much too soon. Rather than bring him along, it was like, damn, he has the physique. He has the look. Let's put him in the world title picture right away. You know what I mean? It wasn't, I'm going to bring him along gradually. It was, we need to plug him in ASAP because he has this look and he could be the next, you know, even in WWE, he could be the next Hulk Hogan. We need a new Hogan. Yeah, plug in Lex Luger. He looks fantastic. Look at that physique. You know what I mean? So that's where I think he is the old, you know, where he is, like, he is the probably that classic example of just being too much too soon, way too fast, and it just didn't work out. But then again, probably made a Hall of Fame career out of it. You know what I mean? So, you know, longest reigning United States champion of all time still. So,
yep. Is he in the WWE Hall of Fame?
No,
he's not.
No, I'm gonna say preemptively, not yet. Because I think he is a Hall of Famer.
Maybe next year, you know, with this Icons episode, maybe that'll lead to something for him. I mean, I think he should be there. Absolutely.
All right, so here's the thing, and I don't want to get too much in because I do want to say this for the episode, but is it the fact, not that his worker, his personality when he was a wrestler, is it the fact that WWE doesn't want you to see a wrestler in a wheelchair doing a Hall of Fame speech on stage? Because it kind of points out the ills of professional wrestling. The dark side of the ring, quote unquote.
Right. I mean, it's probably fair to say, however, it's also fair to ask the questions of why and how he
to that wheelchair. You know, was it strictly wrestling? Was it all the steroids he did and the drugs that he did? But I mean, people will jump to that conclusion. Oh, wrestling did this. Let's ask more questions and get more answers to that.
Right. Assumptions are not always good unless you have the full story. And I think the Icons episode, and I think having stuff like Dark Side of the Ring and other other avenues where you can see other articles and stuff like that, where these people could talk about it. Even like the shoot interviews, sometimes they get a little too sour grapes-ish.
Yeah.
But, you know, to hear some of these stories of behind the scenes and where their mind's at and where, you know, where their bodies are at this point. Are they taking drugs, steroids, and the like, you know? And again, like, you think of, there's so much tied into the Miss Elizabeth thing with him, because she's like America's sweetheart and, you know, everything like that. I think that kind of puts a damper on whatever is going on with him. But apparently he's turned his life around. He's a great guy. Good. So I wish him all the best. Before we sign off, too, I want to give a shout out to Terry Funk battling dementia. It's a damn shame. And I know he's not doing too well. Wish him all the best. One of the legends in the business. If you want to go hardcore wrestling, he's probably the GOAT. Next to him and Foley, probably 1 and 1A. But that's terrible to see. And I know he's taken a turn to worse ever since his wife has passed away. But apparently he's in an assisted living facility, confirmed on his official Twitter page. Mm. And again, the ills of, you know, maybe long-term, you know, chair shots and hardcore matches taking its toll. But all the best to the Funker. How you doing? Yeah,
absolutely. But,
with that, let's sign off. So as usual, thank you for downloading and subscribing. We've been a little spacey, but it's summertime. Give us a fucking break. How you doing? But as usual, get this where you get all your wrestling podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, all the goodness. Go to Podomatic.com too. That's where we list the main episodes. But we filters out everywhere. We're everywhere. We're sprinkling. We're everywhere. We're like roots. We're just settling down and we're just everywhere. All right. So let us know at Wrestling Guys PC on Twitter. At FPP show, I was looking forward to the horror movie little retrospective thing you were doing. How's that going on for you guys?
Well, the first episode dropped, so you can listen to it now. Anywhere you can listen to a podcast, you can find that episode. It's going to be a long process, but we started with it's basically our version of a Fatal 4-Way. So it's the first episode is 1980 versus 1990 versus 2000 versus 2010, which year had the better horror movie releases, and you can hear our thoughts on that episode anywhere you listen to a podcast.
How are you determining winners?
It's really just, yeah, obviously it's our own personal opinions on the movies, but also the influence that came from those releases, you know, how it kind of elevated the horror scene. It's hard to go against the 80s, I'm gonna say that right off the bat.
That's like your number one seed. Like that's super difficult.
Right. So, but check that out. I mean, there's been some great stuff in the 90s, great stuff in the 2000s and the 2010s, and we're just getting started with that.
Nice. All right. So at FPP show, look out for the rest of those episodes, and at Wrestling Guys PC. And in the meantime, this has been the Wrestling Guys podcast. We came to talk about wrestling and drink some coffee because I had to wake up. I'm just about a lot of coffee. The mug is empty. I'm getting my ass to sleep. Clink to seal the deal. Hold on. A little louder for you out there in La La Land. Pleasure, as usual. Take care. Be safe. Wash your damn hands. And, you know, wear a mask or not if you're vaccinated. How you doing? Take care.